Hello, good morning and welcome to the Finance Show, tiptv.co.uk. It's 10 a.m. on Thursday, the 1st of September. And I'm joined here by James Halliwell, who's head of everything at the Lex Van Dam Training Academy. Head of research?
Some days it's
director,
seems
CEO.
To be the head of everything.
Okay, right. I hope you're okay today because I've got a very difficult question. You've got to be fully, you know, your wits.
Okay, I've had my coffee. I'm ready.
It's a question that, I mean, a lot of people pretend they know what the yield curve is. The long end of the yield curve is flattening. It's doing this, it's doing that. I haven't got a clue what it means. Could you explain, please? The question here is actually the Treasury yield curve approaching its flattest since 2007. Experts say it is hurting bank profitability. Is a flattening yield curve a result of hawkish Yellen or falling inflation expectations, the sign of a recession?
Ooh, that's a good question. So, essentially, the yield curve is the difference between short and long-term rates.
But why is there a curve?
So that it's one minus the other. So you can have the difference between the 2 and the 10-year yield, or the 10 and the 30-year yield. Whatever it may be, essentially it's for bond guys and particularly macro guys, it's often the key indicator of the economic cycle. It's highly, highly correlated to business conditions and economic conditions. So the idea is that the curve flattens. So in other words, if you look at the spread between the two, it bottoms when as conditions are tightening in advance or anticipation of recession. And then as rates go higher, you should expect the yield curve to also rise. So at the moment, the reason it's so low, I believe 77 basis points as opposed to 76, the low in February, it had come up a little bit, despite 10-year yields rising somewhat, is that people essentially have crowded into what they call in the market, they say the long duration, which in other words just means that they've all invested in 30-year bonds or 10 to 30-year bonds, rather than shorter-term bonds, because they're trying to get some interest, because short-term bonds effectively offer nothing or very little in terms of yield. So the expectation is that rates may rise, and that would take out kind of, 50 basis points, 75 basis point yields at the short end. But at the longer end, you'd also get some protection. But that's where the inflation risk is. So now people are becoming a little bit more concerned about the risk of inflation, as I've been talking about and other people have now for some months. That is what long-dated bond holders, so long treasury holders, should be really concerned about. And this is all represented and reflected in the yield curve. So in a nutshell, that's it. So in terms of bank profitability, you can see it correlated one for one. Banks, let me just remember the right way around, they borrow short and lend long, so they can only make the difference between the two rates. And as that comes in, the yield curve flattens. They basically can't get that extra premium on lending out the cash reserves, so they're not very profitable. So a rising or steepening yield curve is good for banks, bank profitability, and a shallower or declining one, is a flattening curve, as they say, is really bad for them. And that's where we've been for some time.
Right, now I know I failed interviews for Oxford, Cambridge, and Harvard, because I don't think I know much more than I did 5 minutes
ago. I'll tell you what, I bet they don't ask you about the markets, sir.
Right.
In the past.
No, something about a train hurtling towards the edge of a cliff, but I think that was maybe a forecast about my life story.
All
right, yes. So let's move along to the most popular in business and finance. Apple boss says EU's Irish tax soup is political crap, which is probably a good description of the EU itself. Tim Cook said that the US tech giant was targeted by the EU over its Irish tax arrangement and accused commissioners of picking on Ireland in the latest twist in the state aid row. That's from The Guardian, which is not too surprising, I would have thought. Citigroup's Ed Moore sees potential for $65 Brent by the end of 2016. All executives should brace for a slow oil recovery, according to leading industry analyst Ed Moore. That's according to oil price. Unfortunately, it's not something I've heard of, but, you know, maybe his call is still right.
Slow oil recovery, perhaps. 65 is quite a high target, but
I think there's rather too many sellers around the $50 a barrel level.
Indeed.
That's my instinctive view on that.
The level that we've been watching, we'll talk about a little bit later as
okay,
well.
Okay, great. Next up, we've got Mike's Morning Markets. Overnight, Asian markets largely reversed losses early in the session as Chinese manufacturing PMI for August surprised by rising it to its highest level in almost 2 years. However, the corresponding private sector Cation PMI survey showed slippage. Selling the South African rand for the Russian ruble on divergent political risk is becoming a trendy FX trade, as Citigroup, SocGen and Toronto Dominion all recommended to its investors. I wouldn't have thought that's the safest trade in town. It's slightly volatile maybe at times, given the geopolitical situations in both countries. One of my favourite stories of the day is UK banking's elitist, says a report by government advisory body, the Social Mobility Commission. Although just 7% of UK pupils are privately educated, they accounted for 70% of the hires over the last 3 years. That's just the way they should be. People scrimp and save to send their kids to private school. They should get a return on their money.
I'll tell you what, that's the reason I'm not in a bank.
The other interesting point, I'd also like to know what the makeup of private or state school people are on the Social Mobility Commission, because I bet the ratio there is rather skewed in favour of private school people as well. 9:30, we had the UK manufacturing PMI for August, which was expected to improve. In fact, the pound has soared. I didn't see what the figure was, but the pound has actually soared since 9:30, so presumably it's happy days on that front.
I'm very happy because I bought yesterday again. And I saw it come back in a little to 130.80.
So right, yes, exactly. We'll go through that as well. And then companies reporting earnings today included Hays, which is hurt by Brexit, and Pernod Ricard. Moving along to Nicole Elliott, the Investor's Chronicle. Brazil's first female president, Dilma Rousseff, was impeached by an overwhelming majority of Senate votes, where 49 of the 81 members are themselves facing legal proceedings on charges of corruption. Well, they're all in the same boat, I think, there. And then yesterday, Spain's acting PM, Mariano Rajoy, lost a no-vote confidence in Parliament. Unless he can get more to back him by October, the country faces its third general election in 13 months. But they haven't had a proper government there for a year. It's made absolutely no difference to anything going on there apart from the political scene.
I think as an outsider observing, so I can't speak for a Spanish man on the street, but as it goes, I think Spain, in terms of the recovery in the housing sector and so on, is probably one of the places that you would like to be long real estate. And the recovery is still doing its thing. Yeah. Ends up with momentum regardless of the political situation. So we've seen what effect political uncertainty can have in the UK economy over the short term with the referendum, over the last 6 months leading to the referendum. But here clearly it has momentum regardless.
Less is more. Next story, which is one I picked out. British firms' pension deficit spiralled by another £100 billion in the last month alone.
Wow.
The UK's total deficit now stands at £710 billion, the biggest level ever. And this, I mean, to me, I was going to ask you about it because it's not something, again, the long end of the yield curve, it's not something I'm an expert on. But it seems to me that one of the worst aspects of having zero rates is it's causing a pensions disaster. You're living frugally now in order to have absolutely, to have people really suffering in the future.
This is the greatest travesty of the middle class and basically all savers, whether it be for retirement or the return that they get in the bank accounts, but specifically for people approaching retirement. My parents, everybody knows somebody if you're not in that position yourself. Until rates rise and that curve steepens, until central bankers release.
So to make it clear, this is central.
This is going to worsen.
The central bank's crime over the last 8 years has been totally to undermine pensions and the future of people over the next 20
or
30 years.
It's an unintended consequence. The wheels have come off the cart, if you like.
We've just gone to the next slide.
It's a huge social problem. It's only worsening.
So you can see that chart there of the liabilities going up and. That's my quote. Who cares? We all have £1 million in savings, a house to sell, or money to inherit.
Well, it'd be nice. If the real estate boom continues, then great.
That's what we're relying on, isn't it? We need people to die to give us money, or we need to that amount of money in the next near term. So easy these days to do that.
Can we just not return to savings and traditional investing and capitalism, please? It's so frustrating because it's penalising the man on the street, not just the people who, like our viewers and myself, invest in the markets. It's not just professionals and speculators. It's quietly really hurting people, and it's going to come to.
People would be up in arms, but because enough people
should be up in arms.
Enough people have property, and enough people are waiting for somebody to die. They don't care.
I don't think that's good enough. because it's reliance on that as opposed
inherited.
To...
Okay, let's move on to the next...
Vulnerability.
We've got David Buick here. What's affecting the retail sector? As you can see here, the share price gains year-to-date have been largely focused on the online area with ASOS there rather than the high street, presumably because of the margins, really.
Yeah, that's interesting. Inditex is an interesting one. It's a Spanish company, despite what we just looked at with Rajoy and 13 months of no political leadership. Yeah, supermarkets, hardly surprising to see them where they are. They've endured... you know, torrid time over the past few years, certainly. So you could have expected a little bit of a bounce post-Brexit, well, but that's hardly surprising.
There's plenty of slides here to come. Okay. Going on to the share price changes, probably the least affected there, AB Foods or the Primark end, and Ocado, and actually, ironically, Tesco there.
Yeah, AB Foods is actually a name that I don't often trade UK names, but it's one of the... few a couple of months ago that I did actually buy post-Brexit. So I no longer hold it, but it has recovered somewhat.
Okay, let's move along again. And Amazon has been the major contributor to the slashing of profit margins. So bigger thy neighbour. Amazon does well. Everybody else hurting very painfully.
Absolutely. And there are some good companies in there. Ted Baker as well. Good profitability and track record. And
trendy.
Yeah,
so it's the trendy end.
Yes.
Let's move along to economic calendar for today. Challenger job cuts, initial jobless claims, US manufacturing, PMI, ISM manufacturing, and the national gas storage change in the US coming up later.
ISM day, favourite day of the month.
Well, better than the non-farm payrolls.
That's tomorrow. That's the next best day of the month.
You're right. Actually, you're right on that.
Yeah, double header.
Okay, let's have a look at the...
And the oil stuff is obviously important as well.
Yeah, Investors Intelligence co-report, S&P Mid-Cap Index has recovered off its lows, hit just after midday. These lows successfully tested the 20-day EMA support, which has held since the June Brexit reaction. An upside reassertion remains imminent. Momentum is attractively positioned and the index is outperforming the large caps. So there is a message there. On to sentiment. We're still long silver and gold. Going with the Bank of Japan's wishes and buying dollar yen, and I suppose going with the Yellen's hint of a rate hike, and then short of euro sterling, which probably after today's jump in sterling will have gone even better. On to the brokers. Oh, no, so it's another trader. Tip of the day, trade of the day, rather. Buy sterling yen, tweezer bottom on monthly chart. Around the 137 is the entry. Objective 141 and stops below 135. And finishing off with the broker forecast, Morrison's, I picked out, not really sure whether I agree with Goldman Sachs saying it's a sell. I think it seems to be repositioning itself or revamping itself quite well with the Ocado deal that was announced recently.
Talking it down, no doubt, hey?
Yeah, yes, exactly. we wouldn't say that. Barclay kicked out of the FTSE 100, but a buy at Deutsche Bank. That tends to be the case, actually, in these situations. And then BP. If you believe that oil is going up to $65, then clearly being overweight is a good idea.
Just quickly, Zach, Deutsche Bank, have a look at their share price. Just breaking above €13.45, a little alert went off for me this morning. Take a look at that.
What, you mean they're not going bust?
I don't want to make such a bold call for people to make. People should make their own decisions, but it's looking interesting. Take a look at the chart.
I will do. James Helliwell, Head of Markets for the Lex Van Dam Trading Academy. Thank you for opening the show today. We'll be back after the break.